Many of you have already brought forward your photographs and autumn leaves. If you have not in your order of service, there are leaves. We would appreciate it if you write the names of any deceased loved ones. You can write more than one name on a leaf. And then Anne Gillespie and Betsy Stepp will be up front creating, perfecting our altar of remembrance. Please feel free at this time to bring forward any additional leaves or any photos or other mementos you'd like to add to that altar.
This is a reading from Frederick Buchner. How they do live on, those giants of our childhood, and how well they manage to take even death in their stride. Because although death can put an end to them right enough, it can never put an end to our relationship with them. Wherever or however else they may have come to life since, it is beyond a doubt that they live still in us. Memory is more than just a looking back to a time that is no longer. It is a looking out into another kind of time altogether, where everything that ever was continues not just to be, but to grow and change with the life that is in it still. The people we loved, the people who loved us, the people who, for good or ill, taught us things, dead and gone though they may be, as we come to understand them in new ways, it is though they come to understand us, and through them we come to understand ourselves in new ways too. Who knows what the communion of saints means? But surely it means more than that we are just all of us haunted by ghosts. Because they are not ghosts, these people we once knew. Not just echoes of voices that have years since ceased to speak. But saints, in the sense that through them, something of the power and richness of life itself not only touched us once long ago, but continues to touch us. To think of them is a matter of not just remembering them as they used to be, but of seeing and hearing them as in some sense they are now. If they had things to say to us then, they have things to say to us now too.
Next Friday is All Souls Day. It's a day when many people around the world pause to remember the dead. Of course, as the words we shared during our chalice lighting this morning remind us, we remember those who've gone before in all seasons of the year and at many different times in our lives. But this day is a special day to remember them all. It's a day observed in many different ways, in different religious traditions from Christian to pagan. Other world religions have similar holidays, perhaps at different time of the year. These traditions may all teach different things about death and immortality, but all seem to agree that there is value for those of us who live on to take time to remember those individuals who have touched our lives with theirs but are no longer with us. The word remembering is an interesting word. If we go back to the Latin root, it simply means to be mindful of or to bring to mind again. But I think the word, think of it in even a stronger and more physical way. In a sense, remembering the dead is to put them back together again, to put flesh on their bones and breath back in their lungs and smiles back on their faces. In a sense, we bring them back to life and we renew our relationship to them. The celebration of All Souls Day, as Buechner reminds us, is not simply about recalling someone from the distant past, but rather it's about engaging with them now. In the celebration of All Souls Day, we celebrate a present relationship and not a closed chapter from the past. On this day, and on every day when we remember them, they rise up again. During my visits to Mexico, I became fascinated with how Mexicans view death and their relationship with death. Death is always right in front of you in Mexico. For example, the casket builder has a shop on the main street with a big showroom window displaying their work. Death is not hidden. It's not unmentionable. It's just part of life. Depictions of skeletons are everywhere in Mexico. Walk into any shop and there will be skeletons for sale. They're not like our Halloween skeletons. They're well-dressed and depicted doing all the things that one does in life, cooking, being a barber, dancing, playing a musical instrument. The kalakas, as they're called, skeletons, are not intended to be scary, but rather they suggest that even in death, we continue to be who we are and not some anonymous, undefined soul. In Mexico, la vida and la muerte, life and death, flow together. Speaking about El Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, Margaret Atwood wrote, "In Mexico, they do this feast the right way. Candy skulls, family picnics on the graves, a plate for each individual guest, a candle for the soul. Everyone goes away happy, including the dead. But we've rejected this easy flow between dimensions. We want our dead unmentionable. We refuse to feed them. Our dead, as a result, are thinner, grayer, harder to hear, and hungrier." If we were in almost any Mexican village this coming week, there would be a great celebration with parades and smiling images of skeletons dressed up in holiday finery, playing instruments or dancing. Families would go to the cemetery, but not for a few minutes of quiet and respectful reflection or prayer at the grave of a loved one. No, they would go for the whole day, bringing a wonderful picnic feast and musical instruments, and they would have a party on the grave with the deceased loved one. It's not a day of sadness, but a day of happiness and renewed relationship. For them, the dead live on, not in some distant place of their Catholic theology, but on this day especially, they're right there in the village with their family. They don't just engage with them in the cemetery either. There will be a sugar skull with the name of the deceased person on prominent display in the home, and there'll be marigold petals will be strewn on the sidewalks leading up to the house to remind the dead person of the way in case they've forgotten. The family will all gather and often make the deceased person's favorite meal for him or her, and the dead will take part in a way in the conversation and the festivities of the day. It's a happy day when everyone's together again. Now, I don't want to suggest to you that Mexicans do not mourn their dead. Of course, they experience the loss of loved ones just as we do. They do their share of weeping and mourning. But somehow they come to a place where they do not so much think of them as dead, but just as gone before and even still right there to engage with. Today, our dead rise up to be with us right here in this room because we brought them here in our hearts. Now, I know that among us there are many different views on whether or not everything ends with the death of our bodies or if our spirits or energy continue to exist in some way. Ever since I can remember, I personally have always had a sense that life goes beyond the biological limits of the body. And it has been with people, and as I've been with people at death, that feeling has only become stronger. And for me, it's really not based on a particular theological teaching, but on my own inner perception and experience of the world. But theologies of the afterlife are not what I want to focus on with you today. However, I do want to talk about immortality and that of those who loved us and of our own immortality, but in another sense. You know, there is no doubt that we rise up again and again after we are dead. No doubt that we live on in the hearts and in the lives of those whom we loved and who loved us. The chain even goes to successive generations when we share our memories and pass on what we were given by our departed friends and family to the generations after us. The dead only die if they die in our hearts. Today I invite you to be in relationship with those who live on with you. Let me preface that discussion by saying I know that there are those among us who had painful memories of parents or grandparents. Not all our memories are good ones. But sometimes we have to work hard to move beyond painful memories. But other times, even engagement with the painful memories can be productive for us. I remember a story of a woman who said that she had been challenged by her relationship with her mother and had worked for years to make sense of some of the pain she suffered from the way she was treated as a child. She said she now felt such a weight lifted because she had finally reconciled with her mother. And when asked how her mother felt about this, she said, "I have no idea. She died 20 years ago." Our relationship with those from our past continue to evolve even long after they're gone. Not a day in my life goes by when those who were closest to me but now have gone don't rise up again. I've come to realize that those who've gone before, as we heard in that reading that Anne shared with us, still have a great deal to say to me, and I to them. There are a couple of people who rise up frequently in my life. I know you're familiar with one, Uncle T. And this week he's particularly in my mind because this would be his 101st birthday in just a couple of days. He was a famous concert pianist, as some of you know, particularly noted for his performance of Mozart. I think one of his recordings is right there. Not long ago, I was listening to NPR, and they were playing a recording of the Mozart Piano Concerto in C major, Kerschel 330. That was Uncle T's piece. He won the Nomburg, playing it in 1940. It launched his career, and I think he played it almost every day of his life. I was drawn into the performance because of the little nuances of interpretation were exactly what Uncle T would do. I could see him doing it, and I couldn't wait to hear whom the performance was by. I thought for sure it must have been one of the many pianists who studied with him. But it turned out it was an old recording of Uncle T himself performing. When I hear those recordings, Uncle T is back with me. But in the past couple of years, my partner Malcolm, also a concert pianist, has been performing that same piece. And each time he does, Uncle T rises up for me, and for him too, I'm sure. But there was so much more about Uncle T than his musical performance that still speaks to me. I constantly find myself seeing life through the lens he provided. It's a lens of love and right relationship, of seeing the humor in situations and being grateful for every blessing. He had a lot of witty, even silly, somewhat off-color sayings about life. And rarely does a day go by when I don't catch myself saying, as Uncle T would say, and I can't finish the rest of the sentence from the pulpit, each time Uncle T rises up again. Also, my maternal grandmother is another person who rises up with great regularity in my life. She was a school teacher who in her senior years had me as her only devoted pupil. She sparked curiosity in all things and showed me beauty in art and nature and music. She introduced me to the piano, to liberal religion, even to canasta. With her, there was something to learn in every moment. But there was more that she taught by the way she lived her life. She had a practice of always seeing the good in another person. She never spoke badly of anyone, and when challenged by some ugly behavior, her reaction would always be to look beyond it and try to find something good to say about him or her. Sometimes that would really frustrate me as a child. But when I became a lawyer working in the criminal courts, either as a prosecutor or as one representing people who had done some pretty bad things, the memories of my grandmother visited me often. And to my surprise, they always seemed to cause me to find some bit of good even in the most hardened of criminals. For my second birthday, she hooked a Peter Rabbit rug for my bedroom. I was too young to actually remember receiving it, but I remember it being in my room all the years of my childhood. When I got a little older, I put it away in mothballs for a while, thinking I had outgrown it. But today that rug hangs framed in the living room of our lake cottage. And each time I walk into that room, she rises up. The rug constantly reminds me of all the lessons I learned from the children's stories that she read to me. The rug took months to make, I know. And I think how each time she hooked that piece of wool and pulled it through that burlap backing, she was thinking of me. I got to tell you an aside, though. She was very dedicated to this craft of making these rugs and very proud of her work. And she was also a very proper speaker of the English language, never using or even familiar with slang expressions. One time in a discussion of quite a large gathering of folks, someone who was making polite conversation asked everyone what their hobby was. And she very proudly announced to all those gathered that she was a hooker. Those fun memories are good to go back to, too. Sometimes even folks generations earlier, folks that we did not know, rise up in us. I never knew my great-grandfather, who was a Methodist minister. But on the path to ministry, I discovered him in the margin notes and papers inserted in his Bible, and even in the preaching coat that I discovered in an old trunk in an attic. As the next minister to come along in my family, I feel somehow he rises again in me. Well, I'm sure you have stories just like these of folks who regularly rise up for you. As I think about my grandmother and Uncle T, I realize they were not just leading their lives in ways that intersected with mine, but there was actually something conscious about creating those memories. And I'm so glad there was. I've begun to think about that in relationship to our nieces and nephews. It's not just about the interactions we have with them now. It's about what we give them that will live beyond us and maybe help to sustain them in some way when we're long gone. Now, I hope we're all around for a long time to come. But you know, this day is a good day, not just to remember those who we hold in our hearts fondly, but also to think about how we might be remembered on some All Souls Day way in the future. It's not a morbid thought, and I think it might even serve to improve the quality of our relationships here, right now. When we're gone, our lives will still be speaking. If we're parents or grandparents who spend valuable time with children or grandchildren, we will rise again in them. If we are teachers, we'll rise again in our students. If we are musicians, we'll rise again in our music. Artists and crafters will rise again in their creations, scientists in their discoveries, counselors in the good advice given, a good cook in the recipe she or he passes on. Even generations later, we rise again when someone carries on a tradition or discovers us in their genealogy or meets us and some item in an old attic trunk. We may rise again elsewhere in a world beyond our knowing, but for sure we'll rise again and again right here in the lives we touch, just as those who've gone before rise up in our lives this day. And I think that when we're gone, we'll say something just as those who've gone before us might be saying to us right now. These words from a Baltimore housewife, Mary Fry, who created a poem. Do not stand by my grave and weep. I am not there, I do not sleep. I'm a thousand winds that blow. I'm the diamond glint on snow. I'm the sunlight on ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn's rain. When you awake in the morning hush, I am the swift, uplifting rush of quiet birds in circling flight. I am the soft star that shines at night. Do not stand by my grave and cry. I am not there. I do not die. Infinite spirit of life, whom we see at work in all of nature's beauty, bless these bulbs which we are about to plant. With undying love in our hearts, we dedicate each one of them to the memory of one who's gone before. May they remind us of the joys, the smiles, the good times we share with them, the love and care they gave to us and we to them, the things they taught us, and the many ways they blessed our lives. May they be a celebration of the precious lives of those who live on within us, but who have passed from life on this earth. We await with joy the springtime, when again their bright trumpet-like blossoms will sound forth the message that every passerby cannot help but hear. We rise again. As you leave today, you're invited to take a few bulbs, 5, 6, 10, a dozen, whatever, to plant in memory of the loved ones who've gone before. Then go outside the front of the church, and you may plant them, or you can ask one of the helpers who's there to plant them. If you'd like someone else to plant a bulb for you, just please ask them. One of our youth, I think, will be a great option to help with that, and I'm going to ask them at the end of the benediction if they'll come forward and carry these bulbs right outside to the front of the church for us. And families, I really encourage you to plant them together with your children, and you can help them to appreciate the symbolic nature of what it is that we're doing. All the names that you wrote on these leaves will be collected, and when the daffodils come up in the spring, they'll be printed in the order of service to remind us of whom they rise for. Our words of benediction come from the Reverend Charles Gaines. Memories are alive, unbounded by events of death or birth. And as living memories, we possess the greatest gift one person can give to another. Hold tight to the memories of those who've gone before, and make good memories for those who will live on after you're gone. Thank you.